This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry, this is a Doxcast, it's a nerdy Toxcast, discuss a Moxcast, with Rich Early and friends.
Hello everybody and welcome to a nacho-less episode of the Doxcast. I'm your co-host Josh Trumbo, and with me as always is the nacho-full Rich Early. Rich, how are you doing this evening?
I'm awesome, but when you cut that for the Monday podcast, it's not going to make any sense to
you. Oh, I know, but that's why you got to tune in for the live.
It's a special live
thing.
Show, yeah.
Right?
Hey, everybody, welcome to another Doxcast. Tonight we're going to talk about comic books, but real quick to get you up to speed, about once or twice a month we all get together, record multiple episodes, and then they hit our Doxcast stream on iTunes and on our website every Monday morning, courtesy of Josh Trumbo. And yeah, tonight we've got a lot of great stuff to go over. Darren Gregson is here to start this first one off, and we're going to talk comics. Darren and I just talked comics, like, all Saturday morning at ValleyCon.
Oh, yeah, we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
That seems just like such a long time ago.
It was. There's so much going on that it seems like it was, like, 2 weeks ago. So.
Yeah.
We do a thing called the Paradox Comics Block at the conventions, where we take all of the comic or artistic stuff and we shove it into a 2-hour time period. Darren, the big thing for me this year was I always think 2 hours is going to be really long, but in reality it goes by like that. Like,
that's
I couldn't
right.
believe when it was like 11:30 already.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, we had a great audience, some great questions, and that helped you know, move the talk forward, and it there was some really good interesting people talking to us, so you know, that was a great experience.
It wasn't a huge audience, but it was very good. You know,
quality.
The people who were there.
Yeah,
exactly. So, and we had a couple of people walk up to us at the end and say that they really enjoyed what we were doing with those. So we really need to figure out how to connect to a bigger audience.
Yeah.
Those shows. I actually have a really good idea for FM Comic Con that I got to talk to Tony about. So, all right. So,
okay.
When we do the comic block, one thing we do is we have a panel of what comics are really good right now.
Yeah.
But we sort of talk about that is the whole series, you know, or things like that. And it just touches the surface. So what we're going to do in this podcast is Darren and I have a bunch of stuff we personally enjoy, and we're going to go back and forth through that stack.
Yeah.
And I suggested that we have Josh be the guy we were trying to convince to read these books, but Darren thought that was too much pressure, and so we're not going
to
do that.
I've spent all day trying to sell comics. I mean, I might not have done a very good job, but I've been trying, and I just want a little break.
I can be a pretty big jerk, too. So.
Woody wants to know if there are DC spoilers. No, no DC spoilers.
Yeah, because there are no DC books in
our stacks.
Yeah,
suck it, DC. Actually, which is funny, because Darren, all of our friends in the comic book industry all work for
yeah,
DC.
That's right.
Yeah, that's who we know. We don't know anybody else.
I have a DC book. I have the Bendis and Pearl.
Oh, Pearl.
Bendis.
Sure.
Yeah, but that, I don't think. Jamie, are you reading that, Jamie?
No, there's no. No, okay. Does it have the Justice League or
no.
Aquaman or Blue Beetle? Is Blue Beetle in it?
Not that I know of. Okay. Not yet.
All right, why don't you kick us off with a book?
Okay, so Adventure Time. I've kind of always liked Adventure Time since moving here. Amy and my wife and her children love Adventure Time, and the cartoon just finished. Season 10 was the final season. And Boom Studios, who have been publishing a Adventure Time comic since 2012, just released Season 11, Issue 1, and it continues from the cartoon. I'm not sure whether it's an official continuation, but it certainly feels like it is. I'm watching the cartoon. We have the series on DVD, and we're kind of slowly working our way through, but I just jumped in to Season 11. And I'm loving it. I just love the animation, the style, the characters. If you are an Adventure Time fan of the cartoon or any of the merchandise, you should be reading this book. It captures the characters very well. The artwork is amazing. Adventure Time Season 11, Issue 1. I can't really spoil it too much. I don't want to spoil it. But like I say, it continues from the cartoon, so I would jump on and come and get a copy from Paradox. So there you go.
Is your family an Adventure Time family, though?
My children do actually enjoy watching Adventure Time. They they kind of phase in and out of shows.
Yeah.
So it just depends, and it depends on which one has the remote. Adventure Time was on very regularly for a good month, but now. And that's my son would usually be the one to turn that on, but he's gotten really busy with like he's had play practice and soccer, which is just finishing up, and he's had a few more activities than my daughter has, so she often is the one that's picking the shows right now. So Adventure Time has not been on the TV in a little while, but they are definitely fans and they both enjoyed it. So.
And, it's
and I enjoy it, too. Let me just throw that in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's really cool. You like Adventure Time. Like, I don't know why it strikes me as something that I wouldn't pay you for or whatever, but I think that's awesome.
My wife, apparently I remind my wife of the Ice King. Apparently, maybe not personality. I don't know where the compliment is there, but I'm sure there is one. It might be my nose. I don't know.
And it's another book that the comic industry, to me, continues to miss opportunities on. Here's a book that is attached to a major animated property that's hugely popular.
Yep.
We just don't sell, not just us, as an industry. Yep. You know, I bet that book has a print run of, you know, 15,000 or under, right?
Yeah.
And has hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of fans. Yeah. So we just don't connect, and it's another thing. But that's why we're here on this podcast, is to try to start making those connections. So. My first book, do we have a camera or are we just...
No, I don't have the camera on. So. I'm going to move your microphone over here since you seem to be looking that direction all the time.
No, I'm sorry. I can...
No, it's over there now.
Okay. Yeah. I just didn't want my beautiful face blocked by the... No. Yeah.
No one wants that.
No one wants that. Yeah. So my first book is called The Immortal Hulk. There have been a ton of incarnations of Incredible Hulk comics, whatever. And if you follow Marvel continuity, which is not something I recommend most people do. I recommend you read Marvel comics, but, you know, comic continuity is like a big soap opera. So whatever's true today is probably not true 6 months from now is more my point. But so last year during one of their big events, or 2 years ago, I don't know, a while ago, Bruce Banner died. He actually had given Clint Barton a arrow that could kill him if he was Bruce Banner. It was, an adamantium arrow? I don't even remember.
I can't remember, to be honest.
So the idea was to take him out when he became ultimately too dangerous. So he died, but he got better. And But the thing is, the way he got better and what this book is what's fascinating. Think about this. Bruce Banner is a Jekyll and Hyde character. He's a man trapped with a monster's body. And what does he always try to do? He's always tried to, A, either live with it or B, free himself of it, right?
Yeah.
So he thought death would free him from it. And it turns out even dying can't get him away from the monster. And that's part of the theme of this book is how much despair and desperation Bruce has just basically given up, you know, for all intents and purposes, right? And, like, now is stuck forever, seemingly, with the monster. Mm. So the really cool thing about The Immortal Hulk is that it is it's an Al Ewing book, but it is back to the basic roots of the original Hulk stuff, which was a monster comic. And I remember at one point in my life thinking I didn't like monster comics. And then I read Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. And I was like, wait, I love monster comics. They just need to be really good.
Yeah.
And that's what Immortal Hulk is. This book is just fantastic. It's been the first four issues in particular are all solo stories, very much like the original television series where Bruce is going from town to town and he's having adventures. Only the adventures are all these horrific adventures, and they seem to possibly all have a thread of gamma radiation being connected throughout them as well. So, and then the bigger plot begins to develop from there. We're on issue like 7, I think
7.
Yeah, this book is really good. Like, it's a really good Hulk comic. It's a really good monster comic, and it's just a good comic. Like, they build the characters. It's all about character building, and there's this theme of there's some mysteries. There's a theme of looking in the mirror and what's looking back at you, which is this obvious dynamic of Bruce versus the monster in the first place. But there's a lot more going on than that as we're beginning to be introduced to when Sasquatch shows up. Mm-hmm. So it's very good. It's there you go. Great comic.
Cool.
By the way, all the comics we're showing off, you can come in and buy today or order or add to your subscription list, and you can definitely do so just by letting us know right here.
Yeah.
Plug. So.
Okay, so the next book, my next book is a book called Cemetery Beach. It's from Image Comics, written by Warren Ellis and drawn by Jason Howard. They've been working on a longer story called Trees, and they're just taking a little break for this. I think it's going to be about a 7-issue miniseries. It's a sci-fi book. 2 issues so far. A general idea is that I believe after World War II, a group of people went into space and went to inhabit a planet, and they've been cut off from Earth. And it's—I don't know whether it's the future or the present—but someone's gone to from Earth has gone to infiltrate this colony, and so it's interesting because technology there is different. They went with the machines and everything that they built from, let's say, the 40s or 50s, and their technology has kind of, it's the same, but it's different. In some ways, it's probably not as advanced. But it's all about them trying to keep people from Earth away, and their concerns about, you know, someone from Earth infiltrating and then trying to invade the planet. So it's quite interesting. It's basically 2 issues in. It's just a long chase scene so far, which is fantastic. It's a totally different pace from Trees, which was very slow and very, you know, emotional and kind of character-based. But this is just an action-packed story that, you know, just doesn't stop from the first few pages. So 2 issues so far. It's very good. Very kinetic.
That sounds a lot like Injection, where you just sort of hit the ground running.
Yeah.
You didn't really know what was happening. It almost felt like it was going to be a better... And I love singles, so I hate to say this, but, you know, like, it almost felt like it would read smoother as the 100-page trade or
sure.
whatever. But
yeah.
Is it similar to that, where it's just like, yep, we're just going?
Yes, definitely. And Jason Howard's art lends itself, the way he makes his marks and his kinetic line work, just... perfect. And some great action shots with vehicles exploding. If you want an action, this is an action comic, pure and simple. If you want, I mean, even the cover, you just have to look at it and it looks fantastic. Something, it's very simple, but you
awesome.
Know, yeah. Jason,
hey,
Cemetery Beach.
Jim Deal is joining in. Hey, Jim, we are talking about comics that we're really enjoying right now. So, was that from Image or is that a...
Yeah, that was from Image Comics.
For some reason, I kept thinking it was a Boom, and I don't know why. So, my next book is East of West. For the first time in its entire run, I got to read the new issue the week that it came out,
wow.
which was fantastic. So, it's issue 39. We've talked about this book on the podcast before. You've talked to me, I'm sure, in person about it, but... You know, I don't want to go into all that again super hard then, but, like, the thing about the book, it's if you're a Game of Thrones fan, this would be a perfect book for you. It's sort of a combination of, you know, an end-of-the-world apocalypse story featuring the four horsemen of the apocalypse and a alternate version of the North American continent that where history changed starting with the end of the Civil War. And instead of what we know happened, it's basically Westeros. It's a continent of, you know, the West Coast is actually the Republic of Mao. The East Coast is split between the Union and... I don't even know what they call the South, because it's always the Black Towers, the you know, the capital.
Yeah,
of the South.
No, I can't remember. Actually.
There's the Republic of Texas.
Yeah.
There is the sort of like oil kingdom in the southern, like in around New Orleans, and then the Indian Nation or the Endless Nation, which has an absolutely fascinating backstory
yeah.
that still continues to develop. We were in issue like 36 or 7 when we found out because the Indian tribe. Have become all technological based instead
yeah.
of spiritual. There's still a spirituality to them, but
yeah.
it's a complete flip-flop, and you finally find out why in even the most recent issue. So the thing, or I think like 2 issues ago,
yeah.
but the thing that's awesome about East of West is every issue is a standalone-ish issue that's like a puzzle piece where the things just keep falling into place like one issue at a time. Things do accelerate, things also do slow down, but it also just has a ton of, at least for me, emotion in it, especially between the woman who leads the Republic of Mao, the Horsemen of Death, and their son. And their son is supposed to be the bringer of the apocalypse. But the Horsemen have split and everything's screwed up. So it's, but there's all this political intrigue. The art, too, Nick Dragotta's art, it just kills it. I mean, the book is so good. It's, that's probably, if you walked in right now and said, give me a series I should read, that's always going to be my series I will point to at the moment. So.
I read the trades and I forget how good, I mean, it's, I know how good it is, but I say, like, I don't know, it's 6 or 7 months in between trades, and then I'll read a trade, and I'm just reminded that this is probably one of the best books I've ever read. You know,
it it's really so good. Yeah, so. It really is a classic status book, I think. Yeah. So. All right.
So. Oh, I'm next. Okay. Yeah. Ooh. Okay, so this one's a brand new, 3 weeks old. This is, and the title will give you everything you need to know, really. And it's called Murder Falcon. And this is by Daniel Warren Johnson.
Oh, who, it's every bit as good as the title.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Who did Extremity last year. Totally different kind of book. This is it is what it says it is, like I say. So basically, monsters are invading Earth. And there's a guy who's just, I think he's just left a band for various reasons. Now, music band, and he plays the guitar. And you find out that there's this falcon, and when he plays his guitar, this falcon, who's from the planet where these 8 monsters are coming from, or this dimension, he gets his superpowers, so he can basically beat up destroy these monsters, and that is what it is, and it's fantastic, and it's a lot of fun, and the artwork is great, and they drive a cool van as well. So there you go.
Josh, it's kind of like I could have seen the Snowman coming up with this concept, or like a Tenacious D sort of thing is what it really hits me as. So
yeah,
I might have to look at that one.
Tell me about the covers too.
Yeah, so there's cover A and then cover B is going to be, I think there's going to be 7 issues, and they're all homages to like heavy metal covers, album covers. So I think I can't remember what the first one was, but I think the second one is an Iron Maiden, which has just been on FOC, so that'll be out in November.
The first issue is sold out from Image. We have copies, but that sort of puts it on that precarious edge of, you know, is it going to start creeping up? Yeah. And we were even talking about that this morning. Yeah. I was suggesting
I'm keeping an eye on it,
possibly marking it up. Yeah. So, because we're greedy,
what's the next book?
The next book is from my list. I don't know how we have to kill, 45 minutes, so we can't. No, if we go too fast, it's going to be bad.
Yeah. I think we're doing fine.
So my next book, I mean, a lot of these books are books that both Darren and I really like, so it's not so much that it's is Venom, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you that, I don't know, over my 25-year career as a comic shop owner, to predict that I would be sitting on a podcast telling you Venom was one of the best comics being published is definitely not something that I would have believed had you told me that that was going to happen.
Would it mean that all the other books were just really, really bad?
Yes, I think it would just be that it was a comparison game. It's terrible, but everything else is actually worse, and we have to pick something. So, and I remember, Stephen Strom, the day that they announced Donny Cates was going to write Venom, he's like, me, 10 seconds ago, I have no interest in a Venom comic. Me, now, I want to read a Venom comic. Yeah. so there's a Venom movie that just came out. I don't know. I've seen it. It's actually pretty good. And I love that they've made it, the internet's got a meme where Venom and Eddie are the ultimate bromance now.
Nice.
They're listed as people's favorite power couples and romantic couples in movies.
Venom-y.
I liked it. It's a really kind of, it's a simple version of the Venom myth, or origin or whatever, without Spider-Man. So they had to sort of retell it.
Yeah.
What was sort of interesting, though, is that it actually has some overtone crossover with this current book. So what Donny Cates, when we first met him, at least when I first met him, was God Country.
Yeah.
And then we managed to have a podcast with him because you always got to mention that.
Yeah.
we podcasted with the hottest comics writer in comics. But You can. I always want to say you can forget everything you know about Venom, but that's not how Donnie does it, right? Like, that's actually not at all the case with Venom. Yeah. It's more that he took everything that Venom was, flipped it on its head by including it in what he was doing, and made it unbelievably cool. like really good. And right along with Ryan Stegman's fantastic art. It sort of is a Cthulhu horror story.
Yeah.
Now, basically, have you read some of this? Right?
I have. This is one of the comics that's in my box. I get Venom now, and I've been keeping up with it primarily because that first issue, when that was, which initiative was that again? The Marvel.
This one?
Yeah.
This is Fresh Start.
This is Fresh Start. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
When we were doing the Fresh Start thing, I had a copy to read so I could contribute something on the podcast. And that was immediately what I saw in it, was that there were definite Lovecraftian sorts of overtones and undertones and polytones and all sorts of tones going on in there, which is funny because they don't like loud sounds, the symbiotes. And so I started reading the book, and it is. There's this definite bit of Lovecraft in there, this gothic horror sort of thing. But it's also just very unabashedly just like 90s comics sort of, here's the big bad guy who's the lord of all the symbiotes and stuff. And but it works so well. Like, it's just such a fun book, but it's also well written. It's the art, of course, is great, and I don't know. I've really been enjoying it, and I'm with you. I've never really had much interest in the Venom character. I thought it was a really interesting story arc when Venom was introduced in Spider-Man, how it was this symbiote and everything, and then when Ultimate Spider-Man did it, I thought there were some interesting things that were done with Venom, but I've always seen it through the lens of Spider-Man.
Yep.
Like, I haven't seen Venom outside of that, like Eddie Brock and Venom, and this is really good stuff. If you read only one book that I say something about on this podcast today, let it be Venom.
Yeah. And it's another book about a guy and a monster, Eddie Brock and the symbiote, and what it's like for Eddie to have to live with the monster. And, and he starts off believing he's really alone, and it's kind of interesting. The arc is ultimately sort of about, how they're together, And there's just a lot of really interesting things going on in that comic.
That's one of the things that I found very interesting about it, was the relationship between Eddie and the symbiote. And that it's not just, like where Hulk is, Banner's trying to get this monster out of him. With Venom, Eddie Brock is trying to, live with it. And it actually makes him stronger as a person, not just because it gives him superpowers, but, there's this very interesting thing where it's not just his demons. Like, it's not something whispering in his ear telling him to do bad things. It's become a part of him, and it's his confidant and his partner. But it's also this allegory for any number of mental things that people may be dealing with. And I found all of that very fascinating and very well done.
Yep. I'm that's about perfectly spot on for the book. I mean, the only other thing to say about it is it sort of like adds a layer to the Venom mythology that takes it from being just, this suit that Spider-Man picked up, and it's a symbiote, it also, I think, really justifies the 90s storytelling of like Planet of the Symbiotes and stuff like that, that I remember thinking was just terrible stuff, but it actually just turns that all in its head, and it's really cool. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a great book. So,
I agree.
Excellent. So, surprisingly, my next book is an Image book. it's called The New World, and it's a 5-issue series. 4 issues are out already. It's written by a writer called Anish Kot, and the art is by Trad Moore. I am a fan. I do like Anish Kot's writing, but the main draw for this book, the main reason I'm buying it, is because Trad Moore, the artist, is, I think he's just fantastic. He's worked on Luther Strode with Justin Jordan, I believe. and a few other books. Ghost Rider, he helped create the Robbie Ray's Ghost Rider. I think I'm just trying to think how to choose my words, but I think Trad Moore is an artist that has got a very, very distinctive style. His storytelling is fantastic. He's pushing. It's very simple but very complex. It works really well, and I think that, you know, in 10, 15 years' time, he's going to be considered like a master, you know, of the craft. Really, one of my criticisms of a lot of comic artists, even some that I really like, is a lot of the characters look the same, especially the female characters, and very interchangeable. You know, I think I've said before, you know, you have a very generic face, and there might just be a different hair color. Slightly different hairstyle. There might be a mole on the cheek or something. But he has got a very distinctive, and every character looks like individual. So basically, and I'll get to the story in a minute. But yeah, that is the main draw, is Trad Moore's artwork. The story is it's set in the future, and it's a society where there's police are like this, like a reality TV, and they follow these police around, and it's quite a brutal show. You know, you get to see all the graphic things that happen, like, you know, when the arrests and people get killed. And the most famous, I can't remember her name, but this female character is the most famous police officer, and she's like a superstar, and so she's the main female character, and the male character. He's like a cyber terrorist, and he gets up to no good, and he's a wanted person. These two characters end up meeting in a social setting, and they have no idea who each other are. And I mean, just that scene alone, they meet in a nightclub, and they end up dancing together, and just the way they dance and come together, the way that Trad Moore has laid that out, is just fantastic. The body language, it doesn't feel forced. It feels very natural. The colors are amazing because there's lights flashing, and you just really believe that these two characters were attracted to each other in this dance club, and they just kind of met. As the story unfolds, they find out how, you know, who each other are, and make some decisions based on that. I mean, it's almost like a Romeo and Juliet kind of story. I think if anyone likes Frank Quitely's work, he does push the storytelling and the layouts, and I think Trad Moore is doing that as well. This is if you want some interesting, kind of something very different, and to be discovering an artist that I really do think he's going to be considered a master of the craft. You know, you want to read The New World, and it is good. And I don't mean to take anything away from Alish Kott's story, but yeah, Trad Moore is fantastic.
So is he the guy, when they introduced that new Ghost Rider?
Yeah.
There was that really, like, those early issues had a really unique style.
That'll be
to
him.
Them.
Yeah, okay. He did the first five issues.
Yep. So. These racing lines around the car and like that kind of thing.
That's
just a really kinetic energy behind it.
He's really young as well. I mean, I think I don't really expect you to remember, but when Donny Cates was talking about it, he was at art school, he was with Jeff Shaw, and he was with Trad Moore as well, and he was saying that those guys were like good then. That's why he didn't draw, because he just saw how good they were.
I remember him saying, there's no point in me for drawing.
Yeah, so there you go. The New World. And we have all four issues in stock. So,
is it a mini and ongoing?
Yeah, just a mini, 5 issues.
Okay.
So yeah.
I'll say this: there have been a couple of times in my experience with you where you've recommended a book this highly that I haven't been reading, and the other two times I found it was just a gigantic mistake on my part not to be reading it. So
I would say try the first issue. I couldn't say for certain whether you're going to like it. I might be seduced by the artwork. Do you know what I mean? And that might, you know, you might pick the story apart. You might really enjoy it. I couldn't say. I would maybe want you to read it, and I would be interested. I might be a little disappointed that you wouldn't like it, but that's okay, I guess, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, I mean.
Oh, no, I know. And yeah. I mean, it's always tough when you recommend something and then the other person gives you the daring response.
Yeah,
but it's not for me, you know. Or
yeah,
whatever,
but
you
the
know?
Design work and everything is just—it's very unique looking, you know. But that, like I say, that might be seduced and kind of you know, buy that. So, but yeah, if you want something to read, Rich, for differently, if you find you've got the time, which I don't, I know you probably won't, you know, maybe try The New World for the first issue.
I took a week vacation and I had a list a mile long to read, and I got through, yeah, 2/3 of the miles.
Yeah,
so,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So,
before you talk about your next comic, Rich, yep, we do have a question in the chat. Josh is asking what you guys think of the DC Black Label comics. He's saying that he's enjoying White Knight right now.
Yeah,
have you guys read any of those?
What we think about White Knight.
Yeah, well, White Knight, I mean, a White Knight, it is a Black Label book, but it wasn't made as a Black Label book. It wasn't originally published as a Black Label book. It's been kind of pushed into that label. And it fits perfectly. I remember Josh, I think Josh got the free comic for Batman Day, which was the first issue of White Knight. And then he came in and bought the trade, which is collects the first, all eight issues.
There is going to be another volume.
Yeah, there is. It's going to be Curse of the White Knight, I believe. That's coming out next year. So, yeah, I like it. And the main reason I like that label is because they are self-contained stories. You don't need to know. There's no continuity. They are what they are. You can just pick up, like, the volume that, you know, that volume and just enjoy it for what it is. We all know who Batman is. We all know, you know, things about that character. There's going to be other characters as well. There's going to be a Wonder Woman. There's going to be a Superman Black Label story. Are we going to talk about Batman Damned?
Yeah, I thought I would.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, thank you.
You know, when you were. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, I think something that you talked about, I think on Saturday was the fact, I think it was Saturday, or maybe, you know, what DC are trying to do, they're trying to create, do they call them evergreen books, like Watchmen and The Killing Joke. You can't really force that. That's just a natural thing that will happen if the book's really good, but they're trying to create some, like, an imprint where they can do that. So that's the idea behind it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Marvel and DC live on the soap opera. You know, everything is the next turn of the screw to see, you know, come back next week to find out how the cliffhanger resolves and that sort of thing. I mean, there are some long-form storytelling, but it's sort of the nature of things for the ongoing publishers, right? And so, yeah, Black Label is exactly what you said. And the most, you know, controversial book that's come out in several years is Batman Damned, number one. It's the first part of a 3-issue series, and there are multiple things about it that are particularly interesting. Notably, it is an oversized comic. I don't remember the...
No.
I don't know if it's 8.5 by 11. You know,
I think it is. It fits in a magazine-sized bag and board, which I think are 11 by 8.5, I think.
So that's really interesting. And for $6.99, you got this, I don't know, 40-page oversized book with absolutely no ads. And I will say this, as not a huge fan of the Azzarello,
you're talking about the Luther books?
No. Who's the artist?
Lee Bermejo.
Oh, Lee Bermejo fan. Yeah. Bermejo absolutely used that book to about as full an extent as I've ever seen anybody use a comic. I mean, down to every detail. Batman in this story has sort of bat armor, and even down to the minutest of details on that armor, he used. It isn't just a comic that was drawn for a normal comic size and then blown up.
No.
I mean, this comic was drawn to this format,
and
it's gorgeous. But Black Label is supposed to mean, and they wanted us to know that, that it's also an adult line. And it's not only is evergreen and standalone, but it's in-your-face adult. And so it has the first appearance ever of, you know, pardon my language, but the bat penis. Mm-hmm. And so when word got out about this, demand went bananas, and the book went from a $6.99 cover price book to about a $50 or $60 book today.
Yeah.
And the really interesting thing is that there seems to be a lot of controversy with DC because they aren't second printing the book. But before, there was a rumbling that if they did second printing it, they would censor it also.
Hmm.
So the second issue now is coming up on FOC for December 4th or 5th, whatever.
Yeah.
And we don't have there's no appearance of a second printing. So if you don't have a one, you can't get one. And that's really a weird situation.
Yeah.
Because it's part two of a 3-part story. Yeah. So, I mean, we have copies, but we follow the secondary market, and so we've got them at $50-$60.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, we didn't pay that for them. That's true. But, you know, we're in a world of flippers, of people who know what stuff's worth on eBay, and they come in, and we're just absolutely not willing to discount books for people who do that, you know. So that's a whole other podcast, yeah. You know. But anyway, there you go. That's sort of the black label situation as it stands right now.
I do know that the second issue has been delayed because of censoring, that because they were there was more of what was in the first issue.
Yep.
I mean, personally, I don't have a problem with it. I read things online, and I don't know how true they are, but there's rumblings that there's been changes in the hierarchy at DC Comics, and that's affected what DC Black Label has become. It's changed from its initial kind of like what they announced it to be. So, I mean, you know, moving forward, there are books I am excited for. Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder are doing, I think it's called Last Night. That is a Batman book, and it's their last, supposedly Scott Snyder's last Batman book for a while, and Greg Capullo's. That's going to be 3 48-page issues. They're going to be standard size. I'm waiting for that to be announced. If you follow Greg Capullo on Twitter, you'll keep seeing snapshots of his work. So yeah, I'm excited for that. And yeah,
Something that I think of for Paradox is that, you know, we don't want to get embroiled in controversies, and we don't want to get embroiled in politics. And so, you know, I hope the whole thing sorts itself out.
Yeah.
I want my store to just be a safe place for everybody and everybody's opinion on any topic, including this one. You know, in general, I would say, you know, if you hired an art team and they had a vision for the book, I'd rather that you just publish it that way. But that's unrealistic too. That's just not how movies work. You know, it's not how TV works. They adjust all those things depending on the time slot for the TV show at night or the audience they want to get for the movie. So it's not really any different than that, probably.
Right.
So I suppose we're almost out of time. Honestly.
Yeah, we're actually you didn't think we were going to fill 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to each – I was going to say at least one more book, but maybe one from each of you
more. So I'm going to skip Cosmic Ghost Rider just because it's going to be more Donnie Cates talk about how awesome Donnie Cates is. And unless he's watching, we probably don't need to do that anymore. I want to talk Oblivion Song really quickly. This is actually from Robert Kirkman, and he's done several other books besides The Walking Dead along the way, but at least for me, this is my favorite thing. Well, I didn't read Invincible, and I clearly should, because I think that book is probably one of the best comics I've never read. But Oblivion Song is the story of a big chunk of Philadelphia vanishes into another, basically an alternate reality, and part of that alternate reality appears in place of it in Philadelphia. So it's like a twofold thing. It's like the problem on the one hand is about 100,000 people have, you know, and their buildings and property and everything have vanished from the face of the earth, but they've also been replaced. So here we're not only dealing with loss, but we're dealing with like the creatures and the environment and the impact on all, you know, all the things around it that happens with that. But over the 10-year period, our main character has been part of a program to go into, and they call it Oblivion, the other side, to go to the other side and rescue people. And, you know, people there are struggling to survive. Many, many, many die, obviously. They don't have power. They don't have resources. And issue by issue, we get that backstory as it goes along. So we sort of have, we're in the present. It's 10 years later, but we are building the whole world around it. My fear when I read issue one, which I really liked, was that it was more high concept and they would have trouble extending how are they going to tell a story? It's a great one-shot idea, but how does it become a story? Well, we're seeing how it becomes a story we're like eight issues. The art is fantastic. The story is just spot on. It's like reading a movie, or a TV series, or it reminds me of reading Why the Last Man early on, when, you know, you just every issue sort of has a cliffhanger-ish thing to it as well, where you're wanting to come back, and each issue sort of expands the world and the characters just a tiny bit at a time. It's like Robert Kirkman knows how to write a scene or something. I don't know. So one more plug. We met Robert Kirkman earlier this year.
Yeah,
and
we did,
so
didn't we?
Just want to, you know, make sure and put that in. and we met Todd McFarlane, creator of Venom. But yeah, so I great book. We have the trade. We have the issues since the trade. Definitely would be another one besides East and West that I would have on my, you know, what's a East and West is like the what's a long running thing I could catch up on. Oblivion Song is like what's an ongoing thing I could start. You know,
yep.
So
yeah.
Those are there you go. So that's my last one.
Excellent. Darren, you want to go real quick and give us yours?
Okay, quick one. So this is called the book is called Pearl, and this is from the creators of Jessica Jones, and that is Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Gaidos. And as everyone knows, Bendis has just moved to DC. He's working on Superman and Action, and he's also got his own creator-owned line started up again, Jinx World, continuing some of his other books. And are you laughing? You're laughing.
I'm laughing at Woody.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, not at you.
It's all right. Oh, it's okay.
There's a great Simpsons quote from Woody in here.
Okay.
So
yeah, Pearl is it's originally announced as a 6-issue miniseries. It's just been announced as an ongoing. It's about a tattoo artist who has connections to the Yakuza. This is all set in, I think, Japan. And by various events, this character interacts with someone from a rival gang. She saves his life, and that causes some tension between her and the her family, in quotes. And it's all about how their relationship develops and what she's going to do to either please the family or be with the guy that she saved. And I've there's 3 issues out. I've only read the first 2, but I am really enjoying this just because it's something different. It's very creator owned from, like, you know, if you read Bendis' books, you know, it's got that feel of like, you know, the streets, you know, sort of street level action, a lot of dialogue, but interesting dialogue, you know. So Gaidos' artwork is fantastic. The characters look really good. I do think he's used a lot of reference photos, and he might have even just kind of drawn over them in some of the panels, but it works really well the way they do it. So if you like kind of mafia kind of stories and set in Japan, I would highly recommend this book. So there you go.
So there's a bunch of stuff. Mr. Miracle was brought up in the comments, and yeah, I mean, thing is, we've talked about Mr. Miracle so much that we wanted to come to this podcast with. I mean, Mr. Miracle and God Country are, for my money, are the 2 best books of the 21st century so far. Okay. We've talked a lot about them. That's the reason.
That is the reason. Yeah, we wanted to highlight something different.
Yeah. So. All right, Josh, you want to close us out of here?
Absolutely. So we'll go ahead and mention that if you have any books that you are interested in or questions about books that we didn't bring up here, feel free to come down to the shop, talk to Darren, talk to Rich. They'll be more than happy to tell you all the other books that they're reading that didn't make it to the podcast today. And I'm sure they have lots of great opinions on what's currently out there and what they're reading.
Indeed.
So, but yeah, we can only fit so much into a 45-minute-ish podcast.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for tuning in. Just to let you know, in case you don't, we do release these podcasts every Monday on iTunes and ParadoxCNC.com. We tend to record in blocks. We've been kind of splitting them up a little bit recently just because things have been so busy with the 25th anniversary stuff and Extra Life coming up and other things. But we do try to get together once a month to record a block of podcasts and then release them weekly. So you can keep your eye out for the notifications on Twitch, twitch.tv/ParadoxCNC. Of course, on Facebook, when we go live, notifications go out as well. We love it when you guys join us for the live recordings and have questions and comments. It really fuels it and keeps everything moving. So thank you guys, and we hope that we'll see you back next time we record as well. Of course, you can get in touch with us at the aforementioned sites, but also at ParadoxCNC on Twitter, ParadoxCNC on Instagram. Just call into the store, stop on by, pick up some comics, talk comics. One of the best ways to engender that community is not to just pick up your comics and go back home and read them, but to come down to the shop and chat with people about them here. We love it when that happens. So, that, I believe, takes us to the end of our time here for this particular podcast. Thank you guys for stopping in. We hope that you will tune in and stay tuned as we record the next episode tonight. But For everyone else, I believe we will see you on the next DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time, geek on.